I'm Arun Vanagopal, in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. At the turn of the 20th century, people across the world were migrating to the United States in search of the American dream. But at a time when new people were coming in, one community in particular decided to leave. Thousands of Chinese Americans left the United States for China after experiencing rampant racism. These included Patricia Zhou, also known as Chow Kwong Ling, a California girl who went on to great success as an actress in Hong Kong. Joining us to talk about the Chinese-American emigration of the 20th century is Charlotte Brooks, a professor at Baruch College and author of American Exodus. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, Arun.
Why did Chinese-Americans leave the United States in the early 20th century?
Well, it is sort of a flip of what we assume was the normal pattern, where European immigrants were pouring into the United States by the millions looking for upward mobility and security and economic stability. Chinese Americans at this point, the people I wrote about, they were American-born people. They had U.S. citizenship, but their parents, who were by and large merchants, they couldn't become U.S. citizens. They had come to the United States as one of the few groups that could still immigrate from China under the Chinese Exclusion Act. These merchants came seeking the same thing the Europeans sought: economic stability and success. But their children born in the United States faced racism in so many areas of their life. They couldn't live where they wanted to live. They couldn't get jobs outside of a very narrow economic niche economy of restaurants and hand laundries and souvenir stores. They faced downward mobility in American society. So many of them began to consider taking their skills, especially those who had been educated in American universities, to China, which after the turn of the century was seeking such people to try to modernize, build infrastructure, and develop a more modern economic sector.
So how many people are we talking about?
You know, it's a difficult number to trace over time. I've used a mix of immigration statistics and all kinds of documentation. You know, from about 1900 to 1916, we're talking about 5,000 people, which doesn't sound like much, but it was about a quarter of the Chinese American citizen population, mm-hmm. which is actually, if you think about that proportion, is extraordinary. Later on, after about 1919, another 5,000 to 9,000 emigrated, which was about half of the actual native-born Chinese American population.
So some of these people were generations removed from China. How did some of these people fare in a country they'd never lived in before?
You know, there were two groups of immigrants that I profiled. One group, I call them modernizers, because they took their American educations and they went all over China in the first years of their immigration. And they got a lot of notice and they had a great deal of prestige. And so for them, although they were culturally they were often struggling with the language. Many of them spoke the dialect of the South. But the prestige and wealth that they gained was a compensation. There was another group, a lot of people who went to the South where their parents had networks. They were merchants and students. And for the students, this was a real struggle. They were put in village schools. They didn't really speak the language. They struggled. And eventually this infrastructure developed of special schools for Chinese Americans and other ethnic Chinese from overseas to come to South China and study in these special schools where they often studied in English. In the second sort of wave of immigrants by the 1910s and 20s, and especially by the 30s, you had large numbers of people coming from the United States to China to study at universities in China where the medium of instruction was English, which is not really what we assume happens. It was really kind of a way to accommodate this group of people, this kind of hybrid in-between society that developed on China's coast at that time.
I remember when I was 10, my family moved from Houston to India, and we just took like crazy amounts of Better Home and Gardens back issues, Laura Ingalls Wilder, Little House on the Prairie, all these books. And we kind of obsessed over these things when we lived there. We were homesick in a certain way. Did many of these immigrants bring American culture with them overseas?
You know, it's funny. South China, because there had been so many immigration flows over the years, actually – had this sort of market in foreign and American products. And Hong Kong certainly did, and Shanghai certainly did. A lot of Chinese Americans who went to Shanghai worked on an English language paper that was owned by Chinese but modeled off of American publications. And so you have this sort of hybrid culture that develops around these people and eventually other Chinese who have studied abroad. It's quite distinct from other Chinese cultures that are, you know, developed in post-revolution China in the 1900s, 1910s.
Did this pattern of emigration have any impact on U.S.-Chinese relations at the time?
Yeah, it became a real sticking point at various times. And one reason was that foreigners in China, especially Europeans, Americans, and Japanese, had this special status that they had really wrenched away from successive Chinese governments with a series of unequal treaties. That there were places in China that were actually controlled by ceded to Western powers. Most people don't know that parts of Shanghai were governed and policed by something called the Shanghai Municipal Council, which was foreign controlled. There was something called extraterritoriality, meaning that if you're from a foreign country that had a particular kind of agreement with China, if you committed a crime on Chinese soil, you couldn't be tried in a Chinese court. You were tried in your own nation's courts, which is kind of an extraordinary thing. But what this meant for Chinese Americans was that a series of Chinese governments claimed that Chinese Americans were Chinese citizens, and the U.S. government was supposed to protect you, and you were supposed to have extraterritoriality, which for, you know, canny Chinese Americans could be a real opportunity. You could apply for jobs that were only open to Chinese citizens, but if you got into a scrape, you could claim extraterritoriality. And there was a lot of wrangling, but there was also such a deep racism in the State Department at this point that by 1925-26, the U.S. government simply washed its hands of Chinese American citizens and said, while they're in China, we will not protect them.
Many of them did end up returning to the U.S., am I right?
Yeah, most. Most that I've followed.
So that return might suggest somewhat hopefully that the U.S. actually solved a problem of its own making. But is it fair to say that?
What really happened was war, the beginning of World War II in Asia. You had a massive outflow of Chinese Americans. They did not actually follow the nationalist government inland when it retreated in the face of Japanese advance. And in a sense, they voted with their feet. This wasn't about loyalty to anybody. It wasn't that they weren't loyal, but it was about safety, security, and going someplace where there was enough food and there was safety. So in 1946, you see something like 2,000 Chinese Americans pouring out of South China. And of course, after World War II, things did change for Chinese Americans. You know, that not quickly enough. The Chinese Exclusion Act was finally repealed in 1943. And because of labor needs and military needs, Chinese Americans were able to get jobs that they had never gotten before. And that made an impact on Chinese American citizens who were living in China when they see Chinese Americans wearing the uniform of the United States, being treated with respect in positions that before the war would have been impossible. So when they have to make a choice in 45, 46, and then when the communists took over the mainland, many of them make the choice to return.
Charlotte Brooks is a professor at Baruch College and author of American Exodus. Charlotte, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.